Melinda the Enforcer. I'm here with Greg Kokel. This is Stand to Reason's short podcast, the hashtag STRS podcast, because we get your questions from Twitter. You use hashtag STRask. I search for those, and I find them and then pose them to Greg, and he's got 4 minutes to give a good answer, and he usually does that. We also still have the regular podcast. Goes live on Tuesdays between 4 and 6 p.m. You can have a conversation with Greg. You can disagree with him, and you can ask him questions. You can talk about things more in depth. So 4 to 6 p.m., the information's on the homepage on Tuesdays about how to call. You can also go to our broadcast page, and there's a submission thing to submit your question ahead of time, and then I'll schedule with you when to do it. But sometimes we got a lot of those, and we've had a lot of interviews lately, and so I actually am still working on some backlog. Mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't mean you're going to – you still have to be available on a Tuesday to talk to Greg to pose it, mm-hmm. but you can kind of register it with us, and I'll get back to you sooner or later. So you can submit it that way too and sort of
fit you in.
Get on the record at some point. Mm-hmm. But this is the short podcast, so here let we go. First question comes from ISO algorithm, I guess. ISO algorithm. What if God is interpreted as wisdom itself? What happens when the statements in the Bible about him are read with this in mind?
Well, then you're going to read the statements in an entirely different way than you would read them if God was a person. I always kind of chuckle at these what-if questions because a lot of them take us nowhere. What if God is really a leprechaun and he is not the great God of? Then how would you read the scriptures? Well, then you'd have to say think that these are all utterances of a leprechaun, I guess. When people ask what-if questions, a lot of times they turn out to be just stipulations contrary to fact. And, of course, if you stipulate something contrary to fact, then you're in a different world than you were in before, whether it's the God that is actually wisdom or whether it's the God that is really a leprechaun. The question is, why would anybody do that? What would be the reason why we would want to conclude that what the Scripture means to be communicating, what the writers intended, is that God is not a person, but rather he is, what does it say, wisdom personified? Uh-huh. Well, actually, in a way, that's not too bad, because wisdom, God is wisdom personified, but he's not simply limited to wisdom. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going on, you know. Wisdom broadly is the right and moral use of knowledge. I mean, that's a way of looking at it. But God does all kinds of things that obviously entails know-how, which you might call a kind of a wisdom, but are beyond the, just this category of wisdom, you know.
Yeah, the book of Proverbs personifies wisdom.
It personifies wisdom, but it doesn't make it identical.
Right, but that's
God.
Also a certain kind of literature.
Yes.
And not all books of the Bible are the same kind of literature that allow that kind of interpretation.
Yeah, it also personifies foolishness as a harlot many times in the mm-hmm. book of Proverbs. So, you know, it ought to be clear then that what we're talking about is a figure of speech being used for a purpose.
And then you have, like you said, God doing things that just don't make sense to have a personified wisdom. I mean, mm-hmm. wisdom doesn't act in the world.
Yeah.
And yet God is a person who does.
If you say personified, well, that means that is a person who is wisdom. But if that person, then it is a personal something. But if all that is wisdom, then that really truncates who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom is a characteristic of God. It isn't who God is.
A lot of the passages, you're just not going to have to be able to read that back.
Yeah, it's not going to make any sense. Yeah, but there is a kind of beware of the what if. Well, what if it turns out you're wrong? Well, if it turns out I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. And then there are certain consequences. If there is no God, then there's no meaning. There's no morality. There's a whole bunch of other things that seem to follow from the lack of a real God. But, you know, every once in a while it's appropriate to ask what if, but most of the time I think that kind of question is a distraction.
Mm-hmm. Next question comes from Nobre. In Genesis 9:3, God gives Noah all animals to eat. Why then in the Mosaic law is eating certain animals prohibited?
Well, you know, this is an interesting question, and I never thought about that particular angle of it. Usually that passage from Genesis 9 is used to make a different kind of point. Like there was no animal eating before the flood, now there is animal eating. And so I haven't really thought this through, but I'm just give you a couple of responses off the top of my head. And the first one is, all doesn't always mean all, okay? It doesn't mean every single thing. Some animals are poisonous, you know, mm-hmm. I think. And so you're not going to, and some of them are not edible. You know, you're going to get sick. So I think what he was saying there, in general, he's giving animals for man to eat, okay, and giving a latitude there without necessarily saying that every single animal is what you eat. Now, it turns out the Mosaic Law also has another feature to it. And part of what the Mosaic Law did is it provided protection, it seems to be. This is just an observation some have made. There's a book called None of These Diseases, and it trades on the idea that there are certain things that were prohibited to eat, like pork, that under the circumstances that pork was raised in at the time, it was really dangerous to eat, okay? And so so God said, don't eat these things, and it provided for healthful living. Now, Jesus, of course, turned that around a little bit later on with the
because they learned to cook pork all the way through.
Well, I don't know if that was the point, but this is just a side observation that people have made. The biggest reason for the peculiarities in the Mosaic Law is to make them a peculiar people. Mm-hmm. Think of the rescue plan that God was initiating. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, the Abrahamic covenant. God purposes to set aside one man, Abraham, and from Abraham's loins build a nation that he would care for and protect to the end and bless to the end that every nation in the earth will be blessed through them. And that blessing to the nations turns out to be Jesus through the new covenant, okay? So there's your rescue plan played out then through the rest of the scripture as it unfolded in history. Now, how could they do that, though, when there are so many people, so many different religions all around them that were screaming for their attention and could draw them away from the true Yahweh worship? And so what God did is he gave them a law that built a wall culturally around them so that they didn't participate in these kinds of things that might make them syncretistic with other pagan religions. And so there are things about how they dress and how the fabric is used and boiling a kid in milk, and the kid there would be like a goat, a baby goat, and a whole bunch of other things, okay? When you read in Ephesians 2, it says that Jesus has come now to break down the dividing wall which was contained in ordinances and make the two, that is the Jews and the Gentiles, who were separated by that wall into one new man. And so there is a feature of the Mosaic Law that is really just meant to make Jews peculiar, to keep them isolated from these other religions. Around the time of Jesus, that went overboard, and now they're really, first they weren't isolated at all. They're always given to idolatry, and now they're back. At Jesus' time, they'd gone the other direction. Now they're really bigoted, but that was the purpose from the original.
So can I give you what I think is the answer?
No.
Well, I'm the host, so I'm going to. And, I mean, you brought up part of the point. I think basically the Noahic covenant after the flood, where God says everything is okay to eat, was a covenant for all mankind starting over. And then, so all this food's okay to eat.
Yeah.
The Mosaic covenant comes along, and like you were saying, the purpose of the Mosaic covenant was to make Israel as a nation distinct among all the nations.
Right.
And there's a lot of things in the Mosaic Law that are generally okay, but God chose to make them restrictions
right.
in the Mosaic Law, and the food was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But those were temporary aspects of the Mosaic Law for that nation.
Yeah, it seemed to be. And that is actually a pretty good observation.
It's the one I thought you were going to give.
Yes, thank you.
I'll give
yourself a raise.
Thank you very much. Not possible, but okay. next question. How do you bring up topics to discuss with a server in a restaurant? So just very quickly, a lot of you know, some may not know, kind of one of the very practical skills Greg has talked about is how to, you know, start a conversation, how to be a good ambassador in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so you learn the server's name and you address the person by name. You're pleasant to them. You leave them a good tip. And if you're eating with Greg and he engages in conversations with those servers, you leave a really big tip. So Greg is really good, whether it's a server or a store checker or somebody, of kind of throwing something out there to see if the person bites, to get a conversation going. And not just to talk to him, but to get to a spiritual point. And so how do you sort of figure out how to throw those things out there?
That was a pretty good description, I think.
Explained what it was.
Yeah,
how do you do
how?
It?
Well, I don't want to be the people that get the wrong impression. I don't share Christ with everybody I meet, every waitress, whatever. But what I try to be as an ambassador, and this is the first virtue of a good ambassador, is to be ready. And that means we are on the alert for opportunities. Paul said, make the most of the opportunities, you know, conduct yourself with wisdom towards outsiders, making the most of the opportunities. That's Colossians chapter 4, verse 5. And so, so I'm trying to be alert. I kind of smooth the way by learning their name, being friendly, always leaving a good tip, because we bow our head, give thanks. People may overhear conversation of a spiritual nature. If anybody is associating me in any way with Christianity, I want to leave a fragrant aroma. I got to be careful about complaining too much, even if there's something that's legitimate to complain about, that kind of stuff. All of this is to lay a predicate or a foundation, or make the opportunity. But then it's just a matter of keeping my eyes open. And so sometimes when I learn the person's name, maybe there's Sophia. I said, well, that means Sophia means wisdom. It's wisdom personified. There you go. So that was from the last broadcast, though.
No, it was the first question of this one.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
it seems like a long time ago, because your last answer was kind of long and rambling.
Where have I been? In any event, somewhere it says. What's that? You ask about their name. Is there an ethnic origin? Something they're wearing, a piece of jewelry, maybe a tattoo, but you always ask them in a nice way like that. Wow, you're showing a personal interest in that individual. Now, I don't know any magical way. I don't have a question. Here's the question I use that gets me right going. I just pay attention and try to be personal with the individual. Sometimes there's an opportunity that opens up. Sometimes there's not. And sometimes I'll get in a conversation because somebody asked me about praying. They see me praying with my family or others, and they ask about it. That's happened before, and I've written about that. So I think the key to the answer here is that you lay a foundation, you learn the name, you comport yourself with dignity and with good manners, and like you mentioned, leave a decent tip. And I consider that to be 15 to 20%. And if you stay for a long time at the table, make it 25. But 15 even for bad service, because if you're associated with Christ, they're not going to think that you're leaving a bad tip for bad service, but rather because you're a Christian, and Christians have a bad reputation there. So most of it's just laying the foundation and then just watching for an opportunity to ask a question that might lead to spiritual things.
So, and in some ways it's not so much putting the emphasis on trying to find an opening for a spiritual conversation. It's simply showing interest in the person.
Right, right. If their name's Karis, for example, I say, well, that means grace. That's referring to God's grace. And then I might ask them, and then if I have I'm thinking they might be a Christian. I don't usually ask them if they're a Christian. Sometimes I might ask, are you a Christian?
Can I see how they respond?
Sometimes I'll say, do you love the Lord? Or are you a follower of Jesus? Now, the reason I might ask that question, if I was on the West Coast, I would say, are you a Christian? If I'm in the South...
Because Californians will never say yes, just generally speaking.
Yeah, unless they're serious.
Right.
But if I'm in the South, a lot of people identify as Christians but don't know the Lord.
So I heard Dave Ramsey say recently, he says, we're in the South. We're in Tennessee. There's more Baptists here than people.
So... Anyway, they could say, I'm a Christian, and then you're not getting anywhere because they're just identifying a kind of a social thing. And that's why I asked, do you love the Lord? And if they look at me quizzically, then I know what I'm then I know what I'm dealing with, you know. So there's some thoughts that might help.
Great. That's it for this episode, folks. Oh, before we go, want to mention Greg is speaking on November 18th later this month on the East Coast in Smithfield, Rhode Island, Reasonable Faith in an Uncertain World. This is the Evangelical Philosophical Society conference. I know that sounds highfalutin, but the conference is not highfalutin. It's for everybody.
Right.
A bunch of every year, the Evangelical Theological Society meets somewhere in the country. All these great academics and scholars and teachers are coming there for their academic meeting together. And a number of years ago, Dr. William Lane Craig had the idea, as long as everybody's there, to have a conference for general Christians to come to. So that's coming up November 18th in Smithfield, Rhode Island.
And by the way, we hardly ever get out to the New England states.
Oh, yeah.
We'd love to have more invitations, just saying. But it just doesn't happen that much. And obviously, it's a more secularized kind of environment there, but there's plenty of Christians there, so we'd love to do that more often.
Yep. So that's it for this episode, folks. Hashtag STR Ask, 2 episodes every week, posted Mondays and Thursdays. Send us your questions on Twitter. Thanks very much to those who do. They're good questions and interesting conversations. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel.